on 105 FM and online. Cambridge 105.
From 10 till 1.
Mid-mornings with Linda Ness.
My guest today is actor Ian Grieve, who is starring as Gordon Brown in the one-man show The Confessions of Gordon Brown, written and produced by Kevin Toulis and currently running in Trafalgar Studios in London. Reviews of the play include The Telegraph, There is no faulting the atmospheric charge of the piece or Grieve's performance. Reuters, an impressively dour performance. The Independent, the piece rings with authenticity. The Times, flash of genius. New Statesman, Ian Grieve gives a towering performance. Many thanks for coming in to Cambridge 105 to speak to us today, Ian Grieve.
Hello, Linda, how are you?
Hello, I'm absolutely fine.
Good.
Thank you, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. So, before we move on to the phenomenon, the confession of Gordon Brown, the play that you're in, is fast becoming. Let's hear a bit about you. So you trained in Guildford, didn't you, as an actor?
I did.
But immediately hot-footed it back up to Scotland.
Yes. Well, that was where the work was, you see. I was asked to be Gene Kelly in a musical. And so I thought, yeah, okay, that's the best offer I've had. So that was more or less straight out of drama college. So just, you know, you just go where the work is when you take it as it rolls. And and in those days in theatres, they used to have things called acting ASMs.
Assistant stage managers.
Yeah, and it was very difficult getting an equity card in those days. You know, nowadays your budgie could get an equity card, but in those days you had to get a job to get an equity card, and you couldn't get a job without an equity card. Uh-huh. It was one of those. And so you were given an equity card if you became an acting ASM. Mm-hmm. And you did 33 weeks in rep. So that's what I did. That's what took me back up to Scotland, and I met a woman who I didn't like very much. I have to say, but I ended up marrying her. And that's kind of what kept me up there a little bit, yeah.
And you're in this show, The Confessions of Gordon Brown. Mm. How did you get selected for that role, first of all?
It was...
Or elected? Is it selected or elected?
I don't know. Yeah, elected, probably, eventually. It took about as long... The campaign to get the job was about as long as an election. I mean, essentially, I'd heard word of this for a few... months. I got wind of the fact that someone was looking for a Gordon Brown, and just about every actor under the sun that I knew was being looked at for it. And then right out of the blue, the phone call came from this Scottish chap saying, I was told by a casting director who knows you, or I last saw about 20 years ago, that you'd be good for Gordon Brown. Can we Skype? So we Skyped a lot initially, and looked at scripts and had discussions, and then eventually I flew down to meet Kevin, and we decided that we would go for it, yeah. And it was, for me, it was a bit of a decision to make, because it's about an hour and a quarter of a monologue.
Yeah, it's full on.
Yeah, and Kevin was delighted with what he saw, apparently. I was not entirely flattered to think that I'm good casting for Gordon Brown, but, you know, the truth is there, and you can't ignore it. So
I've seen the show, and I have to say, you look a lot like Gordon Brown, but you sound absolutely like Gordon Brown when you're... I mean, you've got the voice to a T, and the mannerisms as well, actually. Did you just have to spend hours, you know, in front of the television looking at Gordon, watching him?
Yeah. Basically, YouTube's a very good friend to an actor, and I spent a lot of time on YouTube. I spent a lot of time not just watching him on YouTube, but watching other people impersonate him, because it seems like a crazy thing to do, but I just wanted to see what they picked out, and I wanted to see what to avoid doing that would therefore lead you down the road of caricature.
Yes.
Because it's really important that when you're talking to the audience for an hour and a quarter, that they feel that they're having a conversation with a person, not just... You know,
an overblown
just
character.
Sitting there observing what's going on. They're part of it, you know. They're part of the conversation, if you like. And so I was very keen to do that. And one of the things that you don't see a lot of in terms of Gordon Brown, when you're on YouTube looking at him, is he has four voices. He's got the Parliament voice. He's got the public speech voice. He's got the interview voice, and he's got the private voice, which no one, but a few people who've met him or worked with him, know. And the only hint I ever got of his private voice was the actual slip in the car. you know, when you heard him talking to his aide, and you realise that his accent has becomes more Scottish slightly, and he becomes more East Coast. He drops his T's and his, you know, a little bit, you know. But otherwise, he's actually very well spoken. He has a kind of RP lilt to his East Coast voice.
Yeah, this is really interesting. We're going to come back to this and explore the play a little bit more. First of all, we're going to play the music that you've selected, which is Miles Kane.
Yes.
Don't Forget Who You Are. Here we go.
So hard.
Forget Who You Are. The choice of my guest this morning, Ian Grieve, who's acting in a play about Gordon Brown, The Confessions of Gordon Brown. That was a really good piece. Who are these guys?
It's just one guy, Miles.
Miles Kane.
Miles, yeah, as I call him. I don't know him, but I'm very jealous of him because he's thin. And I just think he's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, he's very
and it's
good.
For my daughter, whose birthday it was yesterday.
Oh, happy birthday.
17, I know.
And what's her name?
Maddie. It makes me feel old. Oh, but we saw him together at Tea in the Park, so that was the reason for that.
Oh, trendy dad here.
Oh, why?
So, the play, The Confessions of Gordon Brown, it's written and directed by Kevin Toulis, who, I think earlier this year, produced an MI5 spy thriller, Complicit, for Channel
Complicit,
4.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, well, he's a film producer. Kevin's had an extraordinary life. I mean, he's made films about suicide bombers and travelled all over the world, and he's called in to do little punditry bits in various news channels and columns and newspapers about terrorism. And he's written a book about Ireland as well, called Sacred Hearts, which was published years ago. So he's a very interesting guy. He's done quite a lot. Very different life from mine.
And he was a press pundit in the gallery of the House of Commons as well, watching. So he spent a lot of time watching Gordon Brown. Obviously, he interested him.
Yeah, I can't remember if he ever did actually interview Gordon himself. I don't know if he did, but he certainly, in the research for this piece, he spoke to a lot of people who worked with or were in the inner circle of the Brown, what would you call it, gang, if you like. And and so a lot of what is in the play is very well informed. Some of it is speculation, some of it, because it has to be, and because it, I mean, as Kevin says himself, it's not a documentary. You know, it's using Brown as the subject to explore leadership and power and in a modern sense. You know?
Excellent. The play explores the fact that Gordon Brown didn't do very well because of his image. That's one of the things I took away from it. I think it's a bit unfair. I don't mean it's unfair. I think that is absolutely right. But it's so unfair, isn't it, that because of the way people look, you know, they do well or they don't do well in the public eye.
Well, nowadays, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, it's absolutely right. I mean, if you look at the leaders that we have, especially in the West, I mean, they do all have hair. They're all very tall. They've all got 2.4 children, or you know, and at the moment, well, most of the leaders, apart from some name in Germany, they're all men. But maybe it would be interesting for the Labour Party to find a lady to put forward or something. I don't know, just shift things around a little bit. But it's crazy. We do deserve. Someone said, I don't know who. Someone said we deserve the leaders we get and the politicians we get, and we substance is important to us, but the way they look is important to us as well, whether we like it or not, whether we admit it or not.
There was actually an Operation Volvo, apparently. It was called Operation Volvo.
That's right,
and it was to improve the way that he looked. And they were messing with his hair and...
Yeah, hair gel, teeth, teeth gel, smile more. I mean, basically, it's unnatural when you're a guy who's trying to do a job and basically you're suddenly told, right, well, you have to be good for the cameras, you have to be good for this, you have to be good for that. And for 10 years, when he was at the Chancellor of the Exchequer, it wasn't such an important thing. But suddenly, you've got to follow Tony, who was Mr., you know, media guy, you know. And before that, if you think about it, the Prime Minister that Labour had before that was Jim Callaghan and then Harold Wilson. They didn't have to worry about
that. No, they didn't. Things changed.
Yeah, exactly, As he says, you know, I mean, teeth. Harold Wilson got by with a pipe and dentures. I had to have them done. another vital Sunday night routine out with a gel, sitting there, your gums fizzling on the sofa as you wade through another red box. You know, it's that. But it's not only, I mean, it's interesting when you look at plays like this that talk about power and leaders. And I mean, I don't think anyone wrote better plays than Shakespeare on that subject. But the thing that I observed about those plays was that when you sit in a room in the theatre with characters like Richard II, whoever the actor is who's portraying them, you get to know them as a person. Mm-hmm. It's not the title or the throne that you're talking to, it's the person who is inhabiting that. And so it was important in this instance not to play a caricature or not to play the Prime Minister Gordon Brown in a sense, or to show aspects of that, but really know that you're talking to a man who's just a normal man who's trying to deal with these things.
And you liked him, did you? I mean, do you like the character?
Well, I have to confess, while he was a Prime Minister, I didn't really have much time for politics. I was too busy at the time. Yeah. But having looked at him now, I get him. I understand him. I think I'd probably be... I think he probably did a better job as Prime Minister than I would. So there you go. and to be honest with you, I could see the problems that he was facing. You know, he understands that indecision. He wants to be Prime Minister. He's wanted to be Prime Minister for so long that when he finally gets the job, the sands have shifted under his feet, and you know, it's a very different story. And it was very difficult for him to set out his stall once he'd been already in government for 10 years. And so trying to say, oh, I'm going to be different, was a bit difficult for him. But no, in a sense, as a person, I think he's probably a very good man, and I think he's got a moral spine that shown by the work that he does with his wife still now. And I think you know, a lot of the other stuff comes with the territory of having to be a politician. You know, maybe not. It's a phrase I thought of. You know, it's always happiness is when you know you're good casting to play yourself. And I don't think Gordon Brown was good casting for the role he wanted to. You know, he was good as himself, but when he had to be someone else for the sake of his job, he found that quite difficult. And I can empathise with it.
And you often have to ad-lib. I know when I was in, you were ad-libbing with the audience. And there have been a lot of very important people have come in to see it, haven't they? A lot of MPs and ex-cabinet ministers and
all
sorts.
We have indeed. And it's, of course, I don't recognise them because, A, I don't recognise MPs, that, you know, but also I can't see either. I'm quite blind as well. I don't have my glasses on, so I can't really recognise the audience. But, you hear lots of mutterings and either sounds of dissent or agreement or and so on and so forth, which is flattering in a way, because then that's, obviously the audience feel that the conversation is what it's about. You know, they feel comfortable enough to do that, you know. I had a guy in the other night who used to be in the Foreign Office, who seemed to know a lot more about what the play was about than I did. So I don't know whether he was involved in Brown's cabinet or not. I had no idea. But, he was sitting there enjoying the play with a bottle of wine all to himself.
And details of where the play is and how long it's running?
It's in Trafalgar 2, which is in Whitehall. Mm-hmm. Only a few hundred yards from Downing Street.
Wow.
Off Trafalgar Square. And we're there till the 28th.
Okay.
Of...
Any plans after that?
Yes, Kevin certainly does have plans. He's never knowingly without plans.
Without a plan.
And, he's got two or three ideas of different shows he wants to do and extensions of what will happen to this. We may be going back to the Festival Fringe in Edinburgh next year. There may be a tour. We don't know. We're going to look at the options afterwards. But for the foreseeable future, I've kind of like agreed to work with him for the next year or so anyway on this, come what may. So
excellent.
Something I hope to try and honour.
Ian, thank you very, very much for coming in to speak to us
you
today.
For having me.
From 1 till 4.
Afternoons with Matt Webb.
So the firefighters will be getting soapy for charity. What, I hear you cry? Well, they're holding a charity car wash at Parkside Fire Station this Saturday, the 21st of September, from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. I caught up with Parkside's watch commander, Dan Martin, to tell us more a little bit about it, and started by asking him about his role in Cambridgeshire Fire and Rescue.
Within my role, we work looking towards making people safer within the county. Yeah, I'm a watch commander within Cambridgeshire Fire and Rescue Service, based here at Cambridge Fire Station, and I'm particularly working within the Fire Prevention Department. The charity event that we've got going on the 21st of September is the first one since the new station opened this year, so we're quite excited about inviting as many people as we can to come along on the day. What we're doing it for is to raise money for the Firefighters Charity, which is the leading charity in the UK for members of the fire service now and those that have retired. It costs in the region of about £9 million a year to keep it up and running, and because it's funding through charity events such as this, we're certainly looking to make it quite a large event this year. As I say, it's taking place on September the 21st. Fire crews on the day will always be maintaining, dealing with fire calls in and around Cambridge as normal. People can find out more information by visiting our website at www.camsfire.gov.uk, or they can alternatively follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
And also, just tell us a little bit about the new fire station here, because it's an absolutely outstanding building. It's got some wonderful facilities by the look of things.
Most definitely, yes. I mean, it's ultimately providing an excellent, community facility for people to come visit and communicate with our fire crews, it is state of the art. It's got some very good equipment for the firefighters and members of staff that work here, and I'm sure it will be a great asset to the county.
So if you want to get your car cleaned by some lovely firemen and women, do pop along to the Parkside Fire Station this Saturday morning from 9 a.m. As Dan said, the event's been organised in aid of the Firefighters Charity, which provides support, rehabilitation and care for fire service personnel across the country. It's also worth mentioning that there will also be car washes held at the Ramsey Fire Station also this Saturday, and at the Manir Fire Station on Saturday the 28th of September, if those are closer to you. You'll be able to hear this as part of the 105 Best Bits podcast, 105 daytime podcast, over the coming days here on Cambridge 105, and also over at our website, cambridge105.fm. And thanks very much to Dan Martin, the watch commander of Parkside Fire Station there.
You're listening to Matt Webb.
Cambridge 105.
So it It is now 11:30, and I'm pleased to say that joining me on the line to talk about a new play that's taking place in Cambridge called I'll Be Seeing You. It takes place at the Corpus Playroom down St Edward's Passages. Warren Clark, good morning to you, Warren.
Morning.
It's good to have you on Cambridge 105. So first of all, you're the director of the play itself, or the performance. Tell us a little bit about your role as a director in the production.
Well, it's the whole process started about a year ago. So a few of us have been working with the writer, Rachel Jarmy. We first met about September last year to discuss a project to take to Edinburgh. And this play came up, Rachel's idea came up. And we developed that over the course of several months and took it to Edinburgh over August. So, you know, my role was in helping develop that, but also casting the play. And making sure that you're pointing people in the right direction, basically.
Yeah, it's been performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Was that a nerve-wracking experience for you?
It was a fascinating experience. I'd done it before, sort of 19 years ago, so it was the first time in absolutely ages. It's a fantastic experience to be involved in a production up there, and even just as a visitor, the city just comes alive for 3 weeks. But yeah, we did three weeks' worth of performances. And the cast really enjoyed it. We had some great audiences.
Wonderful stuff. And the play is called I'll Be Seeing You. The play is set in Cambridge in the 1940s during the Second World War. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, it is. Cambridge was actually bombed quite early on in the Second World War. So the play is set in 1940. And Rachel did some extensive research on this. And it's based on a real-life event, or the background is a real-life event, which is 18th and 19th of June 1940, a bomb hit Vicarage Terrace just off Sturton Street. Apparently, they were aiming for the railway sidings on nearby Mill Road. But it's believed that these were the first civilian casualties of the Second World War on UK soil. So it was sort of quite a significant moment, but one that's generally forgotten in history. But that kind of just forms the background for what plays out is a sort of very much a character piece, three separate scenes that affect and how different people are affected by what's gone on and what's going on during wartime Cambridge, basically.
And how long has it taken you to write the performance? Has it been a long time? Has it been a couple of months, a couple of years?
Well, as I said, we first met back in September, and Rachel had an idea which she had begun researching, and then we had a first draft, I think, December. It's gone through sort of various iterations since then, and we had a sort of public read-through in May. Made some further changes and refinements as a result of some feedback from that. So the script we have now came together in June, and that's the one we took to Edinburgh and the one that's running in Cambridge this week.
Wonderful stuff. And the first performance was last night. How did that go?
Yeah, it was great. We had a good audience in, good reactions, really positive and engaged. It's really encouraging, and the ticket sales are going through the roof. We've only got a handful left for tonight, so getting quick.
And it's running all the way up until Saturday the 21st of September. It starts at 7:45, is that right?
Yep, that's correct, yep.
And if someone wants to get tickets to the performance, how would they do that?
Go to the ADC Theatre website, adctheatre.com, and then click on the Corpus Playroom link at the top, and we should be there. I should also say that amongst the people in the cast on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week is Emma Howell, who reads the news for you one day a week, so...
Indeed, I was just about to mention that. You
right.
Beat me to it.
Fair enough.
So, yes, if you want to see our Emma Howard reads the news as part of 105 Drive in person, you can see her in the performance. And it takes place at the Corpus Playroom. That's down St Edward's Passage.
Yeah, down by the side of the Arts Theatre, yeah.
Wonderful stuff. It's been brilliant talking to you, Warren, and good luck with the rest of the performances up until the 21st of September. Let's hope you get some sell-out crowds as well. That would be fantastic stuff.
Okay, thank you very much.
Brilliant stuff. That was Warren Clark there, who was talking about the I'll Be Seeing You performance, which takes place at the Corpus Playroom down St Edward's Passage. The play is set in Cambridge in the 1940s during the Second World War, and you can find out more details via the website that Warren mentioned a few minutes ago.
From 1 till 4.
Afternoons with Matt Webb.
Cambridge 105.
So it is just edging up to 2:30, and I'm pleased to say that I'll be joined... Oh, I'm joined on the line now by Mark Thomas. Now, he's a comedian, if you haven't heard of him. Why haven't you? Because he's very well known. And he's joined us on the line to talk about his performance of 100 Acts of Minor Dissent, which the show takes place at the Cambridge Junction on Tuesday, the 24th of September at 8 o'clock. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Hi, how are you doing?
Absolutely fantastic. It's always nice to have a funny man on the line.
Well, there you go.
So tell us, for people who aren't familiar with your comedy, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the show is called 100 Acts of Minor Dissent, and I just basically have to go and commit these 100 acts in the course of a year, and it can be anything from a very small thing to a slightly bigger thing. One of the things we did, for example, was organised a street show, which was a lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender show, in the street. So it's a stand-up show with lesbian and gay and bisexual performers outside the Russian consulate in Edinburgh. And that was really exciting. So I had 500 people at a stand-up show in the street that was about gay rights outside the Russian consulate. So that you can do stuff like that. Or you could do another thing, which was we declared the Apple store in Regent Street, we declared that Irish territory in respect of their tax payment schemes.
Wonderful stuff, and it sounds like you've been here, there and everywhere with us at the moment.
Yes, indeed I have. I've been touring around with it, yeah.
And who inspires you in the world of comedy and the sort of particular field you're involved in? Who was inspiring you as you grew up, as it were?
My favourite comics were people like Dave Allen. I absolutely adored Dave Allen, who is this incredibly mischievous, highly intelligent, lovely chap, who was just an incredible comic and not as well known as he should be, because his family just have refused to put out his TV shows on DVD, which they should have. Well, I don't know, it's up to them. I'm not going to say what they should do, but certainly he'd be far more known if he was.
Indeed. And you've done some TV stuff as well, particularly with Channel 4. Tell us a little bit about that.
I used to do stuff with them some years ago. I did a show called Martell's Comedy Product. All I can do is tell people, if you want to find out what it's like, just go and Google it and look it up. I think that's the best way of describing it. It was such a long time ago now. It's probably 13 years ago since I did it. But certainly, we caused as much ruckus as we could.
So 100 Acts of Minor Dissent, you've been taking this show across the UK. How has it been received at the various venues you've been to so far? Has it been received very well?
They've received it, yeah. Well, I'm going to say it's going to be received very well, even if it hasn't. You know, I'm hardly likely going to turn around and say, no, they hated me. They chased me out of town with pitchforks and flaming torches.
Well, you never know, some comedians might do that.
You're right, maybe they do. No, but so far I've only been shot at twice, so that's good.
Oh dear, that's not good. And you're coming to Cambridge next Tuesday, the 24th of September, 8 o'clock. And what can people expect to see if they've just tuned into the interview and they've missed the beginning of it? What can they expect to see if they choose to come along to see your show?
Well, it's an evening of celebrating the small things that we do to withdraw our consent from the status quo. It's about tripping up ideas in ourselves.
That's very short and sweet. I think that summed it up nicely in a couple of words. And if someone wants to find out more information about your shows and bits and pieces, do you have a website? Are you on Twitter and the social media?
Yeah, it's markthomasinfo.co.uk, and they can also get on Twitter. We've got a demonstration, if anyone is down in London, on Monday night, which is a demonstration outside the Daily Express building to stop the Daily Express sponging off of migrants.
Okay. And do you have a Facebook page as well? Are you on Facebook, or is it
just on
Twitter? You're just on Twitter and your website. Okay, well, very good. Best of luck with your show in Cambridge. I'm sure that'll be received very, very well. You have a
very diverse audience.
And it's been a pleasure talking to you, Mark. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
That was Mark Thomas, the comedian who performs his 100 Acts of Minor Dissent show at the Cambridge Junction on the 24th of September. And if you go over to junction.co.uk, I believe you can book tickets there.
From 10 till 1.
Mid-mornings with Linda Ness.
My guest today is Elspeth Mitchell from Kettle's Yard. Elspeth is one of the people who's running the Castle Hill Open Day, a free event packed with interesting activities. Welcome to Cambridge 105, Elspeth. Many thanks for coming in to see us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So, firstly, you're from Kettle's Yard, which is the old home of Jim Ead.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes.
And he was the curator of the Tate Gallery, I believe.
Yeah, he was a curator at Tate, and he left there. And when he moved to Cambridge, he opened Kettle's Yard House, which contains a wonderful collection of modern art and fascinating objects.
Wow.
And it's a really lovely place to visit. If you haven't before, come down on Saturday. We're reopening it after some building work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great opportunity to come visit it for the first time if you haven't. At Kettle's Yard, we've also got an exhibition gallery where we have changing programme of exhibitions. So that's a different space where we have new artists, contemporary artists, and show more modern art as well.
Excellent. Yes, I was reading about Kettle's Yard because actually I haven't been to see it, Natalie, but I will go. It sounds really, really interesting. It does sound like a fascinating place. But this open day tomorrow, you're doing it in combination with other bodies as well, aren't you?
Yes, it's our cultural partners in the area, in the mm-hmm. Castle Hill area. So we've got the Museum of Cambridge and St Giles's Church, mm-hmm. which is opposite us. We've got St Peter's Church, which is looked after by the CCT, and Cambridge Castle on Castle Mound at Shire Hall. So we're all getting together to have a great big open day.
Wow, that's a great idea, actually, isn't it? Because rather than working independently and all having people in dribs and drabs coming in different days, just to open up and have one great big day just sounds like an amazing idea. It sounds great.
Yes, we've all got so much different variety of things to offer. Mm. So there's all the history at Castle Mound, which is incredibly interesting, mm-hmm. and I'm really looking forward to exploring that. And then the more art side at Kettle's Yard, and then the history of Cambridge at the Museum of Cambridge, like the culture and everything there.
Wow, it does sound good. And this is the second year that you've run this
yes,
open day.
Yes, it was the first year last year, and we had 1,500 people come,
wow.
and it was a great success. So we're really looking forward to it this year.
Yeah, it did sound like a success. So hopefully you can top that number this week. And it'll all be weather dependent, I suppose, as well,
yeah,
as these things often
yeah.
are.
Well, the weather's looking good. It's looking warm and with blue skies. So
yeah.
we think it's going to be a great day.
Will this year's event be any different from last year? Are there any changes?
There's a lot more happening. We've got the nuclear bunker, a former nuclear bunker, I should say, at Shire Hall, which will be open, showing the Archaeological Service's handling collection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be really exciting to get access to. I think it's quite atmospheric. So,
oh, wow.
There'll be lots of talks and tours around mm-hmm. the site, different sites, with storytelling by the wonderful Marion Leeper. Obviously, our changing art exhibitions will be very different from last year.
Excellent. OK, now, I always ask the guests to choose a piece of music for the middle of the interview, and you've chosen Electric Light Orchestra, Mr. Blue Sky. I wonder why.
For various reasons, yes, but we're hoping for blue skies, and we're also all wearing blue T-shirts tomorrow, the staff and the volunteers.
Great, so people will know who you are.
Look out for us,
Mr.
Yes.
Blue Sky, blue T-shirts.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? Playing this music, I feel, will absolutely ensure good weather.
Thanks.
Here we go. We'll come back to you in a moment. And that was ELO, Mr. Blue Sky. Fantastic choice.
Thank you.
And it's worked today, hasn't it? It looks lovely outside.
Yes, it does, yes.
Blue
Very
skies.
Blue.
And this is exactly what you want tomorrow.
It will continue. It will.
It will. It definitely will. Now, I've been looking at the list of activities that are going on tomorrow, and they look absolutely brilliant, I have to say. Do you want to talk us through exactly the list? I know it's a long list, but the list of stuff that's happening tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll run you through some highlights.
Mm.
Well, throughout the day, we've got various drop-in activities. Mm-hmm. So we've got some activities for children. We have a family fete on Northampton Street Green, where you'll be able to get your face painted like a Miro painting, a surrealist painter, which is going to be really exciting. You can make your own cubist dog sculpture, and we're going to have a dog show at the end of the day. You can make an Alfred Wallace boat, like one of our painters in our collection, and a lemon shy, which is kind of like a coconut shy, but
why did you go for lemons just to be a bit different?
In the Kettle's Yard
16?
House, Jim Eade, when he created, he placed a lemon in the living room, dining room area as to show balance within the room in terms of colour.
Oh.
And so we've taken that motif of the lemon and used it for this fun activity. It's going to be great. I'm going to have lots of goes on that. We've also got Meet the Archivist. So we're going to have all the archives at Kettle's Yard out for people to explore. Lots of letters and really interesting photos.
Mm-hmm.
we've got talks and tours happening. Alan Brigham, who's a famous local historian.
Yes, he is, isn't he? He's very well known. Yes.
Yeah, he is. And lots of others. Alison Dickens on a ride out, and Quentin Carroll will be doing tours. Mm-hmm. Some of those are you need to book for, so when you arrive, make sure you get down and book for them if you're really keen
to come.
Yes,
they are going to fill up quite quickly,
aren't they?
They'll be very good.
We've got music. We've got a brass band playing. We've got Resound, an a cappella choir. They'll be singing some lovely tunes. We've got a harpist. We're going to have one of our artists from Kettle's Yard in conversation with a scientist she worked on during a residency at the Institute of Astronomy. Mm-hmm. She'll be in conversation there in the gallery and talking about her work, which is going to be really interesting. And storyteller, we're going to have lots of really interesting stories by Marion Leeper. I'll give you some titles. Mm-hmm. There's one, Bottom of the Mound, Stories from the Medieval Castle, The King Under the Hill.
Oh, it's all really apt.
Yeah,
in
all
this
about
circumstances. Brilliant.
Castle Hill, but they sound like some really intriguing stories. So something for everyone, really, and all ages.
Excellent. Yes, it just sounds absolutely brilliant, actually. And this is all happening at Castle Hill tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow.
What time does the event start?
It starts at 11 a.m. and we'll be there till 5 p.m. So please join us.
That's absolutely fair. Elspeth, thank you very much indeed for coming in to speak to us today, and all the best.
Thank you.
All the best with the event tomorrow. I think it's going to be absolutely brilliant. And because we played, you know, Mr. Blue Sky, you are assured of good weather.
It will be, yeah.
It will be great. Thank you very much.
Proud to broadcast from the city centre.
Cambridge 105.